I've been in this sacred space facility here many, many times over the years. And each time it's getting acquainted with the audience. So I'm going to ask a few questions. How many of you, three questions, how many of you are presently doing some type of yoga? Okay. How many of you are engaged in some type of meditation? Oh, even more. Okay. That was half, huh? Sometimes. Okay, not so regular. And how many of you are not at all familiar with Bhagavad Gita? Okay. We'll start with Bhagavad Gita. He mentioned some things about Bhagavad Gita. My introduction to Bhagavad Gita was in college. Long story short, I read 7 different versions of Bhagavad Gita before I read this one, was number 8. The first Bhagavad Gita I got was from a professor of mine. I had developed a friendship with him outside of class. And he liked to write poetry. And he would sometimes share with me his poetry. And I thought, you know, when he gave me a Bhagavad Gita, I thought it was a poetry book. And I was carrying it around in my clipboard, my other books, and somebody else said, hey, I have one of those, but it's different, so they gave me version number 2. So I went to the library, and I was curious, maybe there's more. There were 5 more, so I checked out the 5, read the 7, and reached 2 conclusions. It's not a book of poetry, and I don't understand it. Some time passed, and someone gave me this one. And I started reading it, and it was easy to understand. And it was curious, why is this one easy and the other ones I couldn't? But I kept reading because it was easy to understand. And gradually, in the text of Bhagavad Gita, it explains how it's to be received. It's by descending knowledge, different than ascending knowledge. Our modern education system is ascending knowledge. And this ancient wisdom is descending knowledge. It's like, I hope you turned your cell phones off. Because cell phones have 3 main things. There's a transmitter, there's a receiver, and there's a little amplifier so you can hear the sound. So someone on the other side of the world can send from their transmitter, and if your receiver is on, then you can receive the signal, and then the amplifier, then you can hear the sound. Boom, boom, boom. So this ancient wisdom is a sound vibration, according to this literature, according to this wisdom, that exists even before the cosmos exists. It's primordial sound. It's spiritual sound. And the transmitter is from that, we'll call it the place of higher consciousness. And then, if you have your receiver on, you can receive it. And that's how the Vedas, this Vedic wisdom, became manifest through those that had the receiver on. They passed it on to their students and on and on and on. And it's ancient. So within the Bhagavad Gita, within this vast body of literature called the Vedas, there's departments of knowledge. I'm going to touch on 2 of them. But, you know, just like there's architecture, there's medicine, there's science, there's sociology, there's governance, there's all the departments of knowledge. There's life. And life has different departments. So we're going to touch on 2, consciousness, because all of those systems of knowledge are for a certain purpose, the same purpose, higher consciousness. And we're going to touch on another, is the science of medicine. Is there a medical department, medicine department here at Northeastern? No? Yes, no?
There is a School of Pharmacy.
School of Pharmacy.
At Northeastern.
At Northeastern, okay. Your wife went to school there, right?
Yeah, she did at MCPH.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. There is something called the Bowie College of Health Sciences.
Okay. So I'm going to speak about the science of medicine called Ayurveda and something to do with meditation in from Ayurveda. So in all the systems of yoga that are within the Bhagavad Gita, they have the same aim, higher consciousness, and there's something that's essential for all of them. Well, let's go back. When people say, do you practice yoga? Generally, people immediately think asanas, body postures. And then meditation is dhyan. That's chapter 6, Bhagavad Gita. Dhyan, yoga. So those two, and pranayama. Any those of you that do yoga, you know what pranayama is. Those are two parts, asanas and pranayama, are part of an eightfold yoga system. The final four is meditation in stages, up to the stage of totally fixed samadhi. So any of the yoga systems, meditation is essential because you can't be a good student if you can't control your mind. You have to be able to control your mind. And something that helps you control your mind is you have a purpose. You want to do well in your exam so that you can do well in your education, so you can do well in life. There is purpose driven. We're going to touch on that topic specific to meditation. All yoga systems, many, not just the Eightfold Yoga System, they all require fixing the mind. So something that I was asked says, that's our topic. The art of mindfulness. Whoops, art of meditation. The art of mindfulness is something I was asked to speak about 2 years ago, visiting colleges, and keeping it short. Mindfulness, as was mentioned, it becomes kind of amorphous. It's a marketable slogan, like green. So, mindful manager, these are the applications that I found. Mindful manager, mindful eating, mindful walking. Mindfulness is an essential part of trauma therapy, without the detail. A friend of mine walking on the street of New York, dressed like this, somebody walked up to him, young American guy. Hey, enjoy being in the moment. Because mindfulness or being in the moment is trendy. And commonly it's associated with Buddhism. It kind of made that term popular because in Buddhism mindfulness is an essential function. But in any kind of yoga, any kind of consciousness elevating process, controlling the mind is essential. And one of the methods, most powerful method, according to scientific experiments and according to the Vedas, is sound. And a lot to say on that, and that's a whole presentation in itself. So we're going to spend some time with this mantra meditation. I hope we have some beads to pass out. Great. And there's the mantra that we'll be referring to, your, you know, musical performance of mantra meditation. We're going to do, not now, it'll be distracting, have you use these meditation beads. Just so what I'm going to attempt to do is three things. Explain some principles and elements that make mantra meditation, sound vibration meditation, effective. And then there's going to be a facilitator. That's going to be you. Yes? Okay. Do the practical application part. So I'm the professor. He's the real teacher. And then we're going to, at the end, we're going to do a little exercise or an experiment. And we're done. So this mindful meditation or sound vibration meditation, there are many things to say about it. I'm going to speak primarily about one. And this big A, it stands for alignment. So alignment is an approximate English translation of the Sanskrit word yojana. Yojana, or alignment, here's a little text I can read. Preparing body, mind, and heart brings us to a state of presence, which is called yojana. In Sanskrit, yojana means connect, join, harness, and yoke. Just like the Sanskrit word, or the word yoga. Yoga means to connect. Our consciousness with higher consciousness, and the connect is yoga. And some of you are from India, so you know about this. The meanings of words are best understood by the verbal root, or dhatu. And the verbal root for yoga or yojana is yuj, Y-U-J, which means connect this with that. And in this case, it's connect our consciousness with higher consciousness. So this topic, today's topic, is alignment of body. Well, let's look at the chart. Here's a little diagram. There's a gate, and inside the gate is another gate, and inside the gate is another gate, because what it's, the gates are protecting is the treasury of the king, or this place of higher consciousness. So there's these three gates, mind, body, and heart, that when properly aligned, help us get to this place of higher consciousness, the human mission. So, this is what we're going to be doing. It's very simple. What's the different levels of alignment? Why is it important? And how to do it? And then at the end is this little guided experience. So now we're going to start with number one, is the what. I touched on it, and to give a visual, because I find myself to be a visual person, so I got help from a teenager that's good with graphics. And here's a little graphic depiction of what. Body, mind, and heart alignment is in order, then what is already inside us, this seat of higher consciousness becomes awakened, becomes part of your everyday moment-to-moment experience, the mindfulness of your life. And so the background is that place, and then that's you, or that's us, in our state of meditation with proper alignment. Here's some explanation of why is it important. I'd like to spend more time, but because of our limitations, I'm not going to be able to do it. Sound vibration is a very powerful form of meditation. Medical studies have demonstrated it. At Harvard University, Dr. Herbert Benson, very famous personality, who did studies for several decades on wellness from Harvard Medical School, and found that when people do some type of meditative activity, the same medicine, the same doctor, the same this and same that, they cure better, more quickly and more completely. And so he did another series of experiments, another 8-10 years. And when there's a sacred sound connected, it was more effective than any other form. Many, many, many studies. So, of all the processes of meditation, sound vibration is especially important. So we're going to use the term mantra meditation. Mantra, Sanskrit word. Man refers to the mind. And tra means to release or to give freedom to the mind. So if the mind is very congested with material conceptions, and with material conceptions comes anticipations and expectations and disappointments and stresses and, you know, what minds do. How to free the mind from all of that toxic stuff is through the medium of mantra. That's what it does. So alignment aids mantra meditation. Distraction, the flickering nature of the mind, chanchala himana Krishna, from Bhagavad Gita. The mind is very flickering. It's like a candle flame in the wind. How to go from distraction to absorption in a singular focus, which is what meditation is attempting to do, facilitating connection. So when there's alignment, these three, body, mind, and heart, this is the why, you're not only your mantra meditation, but your life will be more focused and more clear and more peaceful and more balanced. To help illustrate this, there's a section of the Vedas called Ayurveda. That's the science of medicine. Some of you have heard of this, Ayurveda. Yeah. So, in Ayurveda, it speaks of two fires within the body. And one of those fires within the body is the fire of digestion. And it's in the region of the stomach. You know, the allopathic thing is acidity of the stomach. And Ayurveda speaks of the fire of digestion. And this past month, I was at an Ayurveda clinic taking Panchakarma treatment. Some of you from India, you know what that is. It's a cleansing process and a balancing and a stabilizing process. It's like a tune-up, body tune-up. So from Ayurvedic perspective, one of the primary causes of bad health is undigested food. Because what happens is, if the fire of digestion is weak and food goes in and it doesn't digest, it becomes toxin. And that toxin has a Sanskrit name, am, and then that toxin goes to organs and tissues in the body, and whatever is weak, that becomes inflamed. And then you get a disease. So one of the things that Ayurvedic treatment does is there's a detox and there's a strengthening of the fire of digestion. And there's how to do it, there's lots of detail. But so good health is detox and strong fire of digestion. Then, according to Ayurveda, there's another fire that's in the region of the heart. And it's called Agni, is the Sanskrit word for fire. And that is, it's called Sadaka Agni. Those of you that raised your hand and said that you do some yoga or meditation, those are in the categories of sadhana, and sadhana helps develop, strengthen sadaka agni. And sadaka agni has, this is that cut and paste from an Ayurvedic journal, what you'll see. Sadaka agni is responsible for processing emotions and digesting our experiences. So, in life, there's pleasant and there's unpleasant experiences. It's just the nature of the place. It's sometimes it's daytime, sometimes it's night, sometimes it's hot, sometimes it's cold, sometimes it's this, and sometimes we're in a place of duality. So how to process those negative emotions and our other experiences of life, you know, the good ones too, so that you can grow like, you know, a healthy plant or a healthy being. It helps good emotional health. And if you have good emotional health, you're going to be better at life. You'll be better at school. You'll be better in your relationships. You'll be better in your career. You'll be better in life. So I'm supporting in a very specific way your yoga and meditation. Those of you that aren't doing, please consider. And those of that you are doing, please consider this mantra meditation along with the yoga and meditation that you're already doing. Please consider it. And these are some of the reasons why. We cannot change many external influences in life, but we can change or strengthen our inner being by connecting to who we are. That's the goal. Who are you? Really? You know, not just, this is my nationality, this is my gender, this is my family name, and this is my given name, and you know, this is my, you know, I'm a calm person or an angry person, or that, and that's who I am. Those are all external things. Then deeper, there's, you know, the spiritual essence or the spark of life that's within, that's who we really are. And to approach that, sadhana and sadaka agni help you achieve that. So this is directly from a journal, an Ayurvedic journal. Sadaka agni is a flame in the heart region. When the sadaka agni is burning brightly, one can become spiritually free. Just as the Bhagavad Gita describes, untouched by negativity, as a lotus leaf remains untouched by water. So it's a metaphor from Bhagavad Gita. And the metaphor says, a lily grows on the surface of the water. A lotus has a stem, and the flower opens up above the surface of the water. So if the surface of the water is disturbed, the lotus leaf doesn't get wet. We're in a world where there's pleasant and unpleasant experiences, But those unpleasant experiences won't disturb you if you're situated in this strength of yoga and sadhana. That's what sadhaka agni does. That's what your yoga and meditation done nicely will help you with. It's a very valuable asset in life. Sadhaka agni, with its location as hridaya, means the heart, can act as an instrumental tool for achieving intelligence, discrimination, self-esteem, and enthusiasm. Its functions are very similar to the functions of higher centers of the brain carried out by different neurotransmitters. Neurotransmitters. That's a scientific term. And it helps us process information and helps us process feelings connected with that information. Like, you know, it's cold in Boston. I didn't come from Baltimore, I came from Atlanta. It was much warmer in Atlanta. But hey, I'm in Boston, it's colder in Boston. So, neurotransmitters are telling me, hey, you know, put on your jacket. And it helps us function both in practical terms and the emotional content of your experience of life. Imbalanced sadhaka agni has its highs and its lows. And the mind is imbalanced and the bad experience goes down. The mind goes down. But when sadhaka agni is strong, the mind is balanced, and then when challenges of life face you, you're enthusiastic and the feeling content of your life and thus your capacity to perform well and with good discrimination is become stronger. You want to be successful in life, do sadhana. You want to be good, successful in your academic work, do sadhana. It's good for you. Eat your spinach. So this is the summary. Why? Alignment helps us to balance our sadhaka agni, thus improving our meditation. So that's the what and the why, and now comes the third part, which is the how these things are done. So we're speaking of alignment of body, mind, and heart. We're going to start with body. And you're going to have to demonstrate, so be ready. See, some elements. I'm the professor and he's the teacher. He's going to teach you practical things. Posture is an important part of alignment of the body. With mantra meditation, pronunciation is important. And we'll explain why. And a good time to do both, the mantra part and the sitting properly part. So here's some images indicating posture during meditation. The one on the right is a side view. The one in the front is a front view of the same thing. And so the spine in a straight line and head and shoulders above the spine. And sometimes people like having a little cushion or a little thing, pillow or something, to raise the buttock, so it helps the straightness of the spine. And that's the side view, there's the front view, and sometimes somebody has a problem with their knee, like me. I have a meniscus tear in my right knee, so I can't sit like some of you are sitting anymore. So I sit in a chair. and there's a depiction of what it's like sitting in a chair. And here's an image of a straight spine on the right side and a not straight spine on the other side, with the head stuck out and the spine is not straight. And we'll cover some of the things that happen when posture is good. And then he's going to demonstrate for us, take him through a little exercise. Okay? Perspective and outlook on life can change simply by changing a posture. And I have a direct experience I'm going to share with you. I have a lot of appreciation for the difficulty of being a teenager. And so I have nice relationships with a number of teenagers. And one teenager that I have a nice relationship with, they had a tendency for depression. Not like terrible, not clinical, but, you know, a down mood. And I noticed their sitting posture was like a bag of potatoes. So, and then they would try to do mantra meditation, but they weren't concentrated. It was a tough struggle. So I just suggested, you know, why don't you try this? You know, sit with careful posture. And they, you know, we connect with one another, and so they tried it, and their body posture changed their whole outlook. Their how they viewed the world around them didn't change, but their perspective changed, and their ability to concentrate when doing mantra meditation changed, and that affected everything, and there's a dramatic effect. Good posture assists your body alignment. It gives your internal organs more space, more movement. It allows you to take deeper breaths when you sit properly. And oxygen comes in, and oxygen nourishes the cells of the body, and that's important. You feel more refreshed just from sitting straight. One of the difficulties of stress is go, 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 and the parasympathetic nervous system doesn't get time for rest and relax. It's go, 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 go. So good posture just helps slow that down a little bit. Not like grinding halt, but a more balanced, natural way. So, here's a chair. Or you can sit if you wish. Uh-huh. Go ahead. Want the microphone?
Just the body part?
Just the body part first?
Yeah.
Yes, we're going to do in stages. Okay. This is body posture time.
So, one of the things that helps me achieve the straightening of the body is folding this, as you can see, by increasing the height and then pushing yourself a little forward. You can try it out. You can fold it and then just cross your legs and be a little bit in the front. You will see that it helps you get into a straight line posture. And I just wanted to also do one exercise just so that you're clear about the three elements that were spoken of, the body, mind, and the heart. So right now, whatever you are seeing in front of you is the physical perception of reality. Now if you just close your eyes just for a few moments and just think about any object that comes to your mind, you will see that you are almost like seeing a TV inside you. So whatever is getting projected in that inner screen, that's essentially is the content of your own mind. And the observer or the seer is the soul, or that is the seat of consciousness. So you can see that we have these three realms of existence. There's the body, the external aspect that we can all see, and in the internal aspect, whenever we close our eyes, we see different images getting projected. That's essentially your mind. And the seer of that, both the internal as well as the external, is our soul. So with that, let's just keeping your body straight, maybe we can take a few breaths and then just be mindful of those breaths. We can take a heavy breath. So you feel some relaxation from inside, and you see that there is some alignment with respect to your body, and there is some sense of awareness of the breath.
He's not a yoga teacher. Just about 2 hours, 3 hours before, we were at MIT going through the same procedure, and the yoga teacher was, I'll just share some of the things that she was saying to the students. It's helpful when you begin to do meditation, you get your body aligned properly. So the language that she was using is your hips or your buttocks, you know, think of pressing them down, and then the spine, which has a natural curvature, straight, and the shoulders back and the sternum out. And that's the lower part of the body. If you're in your sitting posture, from your hips up to your shoulders. And then with your head and neck, not the chin out like it showed the sack of potatoes posture, but back a little bit over your chest, and the top of your head reaching up. So those are all physical things, but they're parts of posture. My experience is that you if you're conscious of good posture at the very beginning of your yoga or meditation, it helps to have this. So this is the posture alignment part. So don't go anywhere, because we're going to have you do something next. So now, these are elements. We'll touch on them at the very, very end. He'll take you through a little exercise at the end that practice sitting properly. Then comes another thing that's part of the body platform, and that's, it's okay. All right. That's the mouth, the pronunciation of the sound of the mantra. There are syllables in the mantra, ha, re, Krishna. So just sharing a little bit of something with you. I learned about 2 months ago and looked at it a little more carefully. In the early 1900s, there was a scientist who spent 30 years studying the effect of sound on matter. And the machine that he developed, he called a tonoscope. It has three parts. Something that makes a sound, something that carries a sound, like a tube or a channel, and then the third part is a membrane
where you put powder or very fine sand to see what would happen to the configuration of matter by the influence of sound. So, very carefully documented, 30 years worth of studies could be reproduced again and again and again. And in short, ordinary sound, music, voices and things, over on the organization of matter side, it's kind of chaos. Nothing, no order, disorder. And then sacred sounds or mantra sounds, order and patterns would emerge. For example, the syllable Om. Many of you have heard of that syllable Om. Projecting persons that know how to properly pronounce the syllable Om projected through this tonoscope made a, it would take us a little time, but slowly the powder would order itself into a mandala, called a Sri, this particular kind, with the syllable Om is a Sri mandala, that is depicting the spiritual realm. And then they would change the Om sound and it would become another sound, and the powder would move into a different pattern. And it would happen again and again. So 30 years worth of experimentation. Sanskrit syllables form the Devanagari text, which means sound has form. Material sound, not the same. And mantra sounds have form. You could see the form of the sound. Far out, huh? So, when you pronounce the syllables, pronounce them clearly and carefully. When you're, the sound should be audible, but, you know, not so loud you disturb your neighbors next door. But, it's an audible sound vibration that's recommended through mantra meditation. There are meditations where it's silent and sound vibration is recommended particularly. Allow yourself attention to be with each syllable. It's a way to help capture the mind. If you're listening carefully to the proper sound of the syllables, you've captured the ear. And when you capture the ear, you've captured the mind. Let's say it negatively. If you find that your mind is starting to wander, you're distracted, your thoughts are going here and there. No thanks. Something that you can do when that starts to happen is go to hear each sound. To pronounce each sound carefully, you have to hear it in order to make sure you're pronouncing it carefully. And we're going to have a little experiment in just about 3 minutes, 2 minutes, where the recite the mantra and guided listening carefully to the pronunciation and to the hearing. You know the mantra, right? Yeah, a little experiment, pronunciation and hearing.
So please repeat. Hare, 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 Krishna, Hare, Krishna, 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 Hare, 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 Rama, Hare, Rama, 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 Hare, Hare,
Hare. We'll do the experiment at the end, and the encouragement is for alignment of the body. Clear, along with the posture, clear pronunciation of the syllables. To check it, you have to listen carefully, and it'll help go to the next thing, which is the mind. Some of you may be from, there's lots of studies on this. The structuring effect of sound. Someone here familiar with Dr. Emoto's work? He's a professor in Japan. He's been studying this for some number of, few decades. And the effect of sound on matter. The system that he uses is, he takes water from different places, freezes it, and when the crystals are melting, he has this super powerful microscope that takes a camera picture of the crystal that as it's melting. And since our body is made up of 70% water, it says something about, you know, how important it is. The quality of our life is directly connected to the quality of the water in our body. So one of the places that he liked to take water from was the Fujiwara Dam. And this is a picture of a crystal when it's melted from the Fujiwara Dam. And then the same water by saying certain prayers. Looks a little different. And then you find all this stuff online, it's published. So here's some negative things, sounds. Here's some positive things, sounds. So you just take here. Here's a name. Just say the name. Adolf Hitler. Freeze the water. There's this, what it looked like. Take the water. Say Mother Teresa. There's what it looked like. Or say, you make me sick. I'm going to kill you. That's what it looked like. And just say, sound. Get the idea. Here's a Sanskrit prayer, Sanskrit mantra. And when chanted and then frozen, that's what the crystal looks like. So as sound affects water, it has a big impact on us because we have a body that has a lot of water. And if your body is filled up with negative energy or negative water because we are hearing and speaking negative things all the time, abusive thoughts and, you know, the anger that comes out in music these days and other media, our body is filled with ugly shaped molecules. And that means you're going to not have good health. And then the opposite is true. So mantra meditation is going to help you stay healthy. So now another thing on the physical side is the time. And that's this section. So any time is good, but the best time is early. And it goes like this. In the middle part of the day, it's the productive part of the day. Go, 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 get things done. Passion. At night, the body rests, sleep, ignorance. And then in the early morning, it's goodness. So in that early morning time, anyone that's taken yoga classes will have heard from their yoga teacher, ideal is to do your yoga, do your meditation in the morning. Because it's the mode of goodness hour. And even more specifically, according to the Vedic literature, time is broken up not in minutes and hours, but in muhurtas. And the best time for any kind of consciousness elevating activity is called Brahma Muhurta. And Brahma Muhurta is not a popular time for students. Brahma Muhurta is before sunrise. And specifically, it's an hour and 36 minutes before the sun rises. So a friend of mine works for Apple in California. And the specific application that he works on with Apple is with Apple Watches. So he was like really enthusiastic, want to get you an Apple Watch. I was saying, nah. Oh, come on. I want to... So I have an Apple Watch. But only worked with an Apple phone. So I have an Apple phone too. And the sun rises in Boston tomorrow morning at 6:24 a.m. So count backwards, 1 hour and 36 minutes. And, you know, that's the best time to do your yoga and meditation. Now, most students aren't up at that time. But, you know, those that really want the best, so whenever the best time is for you, whenever you get up, that's early in the morning, whenever that is. Each of us are a little different in our regulation. But I've been rising early, earlier than this actually, for 48 years. And it's good. And if you can't get up that early, that's okay. Whenever you get up, take rest early, get up early. You know that? Early to bed, early to rise. You know that one? Makes men healthy, wealthy, and wise. You've heard that before? No? It's very... I visit China, and they know it in China. I ask them, have you heard that one before? Yeah. Healthy, wealthy, wise. At least that's what they say. So here's some of the reasons why early morning is good. It's the mode of goodness hour. I mentioned that already. And in that mode of goodness hour, it's more easy to be very calm, and the mind can function better in a meditative way in that early morning hour. That mode of goodness hour, it nourishes empowerment, productivity, and clarity. The whole atmosphere, because it's not go, 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 and it's not sleep at night. It's more refreshing and soothing, quiet, peaceful, just naturally so. The air quality, there's ozone or prana, the Sanskrit term prana. There's prana in the air, and there's more prana in the air abundantly available in the morning hours than during the other parts of the day. It's more healthy. Lots of things to say about good health. After resting at night, the body and the mind are refreshed. The stagnation that happens in the rejuvenation of the body at night, it's a good time for yoga and meditation. Have you ever noticed in the morning there's sometimes or regularly a white film on your tongue? It's in Sanskrit it's Aam, A-A-M, Aam. And Aam means toxin. That's the undigested food. When the sadaka agni isn't strong, or the agni of the stomach is not strong. So what happens at night is the body is resting, and the toxins in the body that went to tissues and other places, the body arranges for them to go to the stomach so you can eliminate them. That's why evacuating in the morning is important. It eliminates those toxins just by nature's own arrangement. So I learned this from Ayurveda. The stomach has lots of toxins, and something that helps eliminate the toxins from the body from that early morning time is you take boiled apple. A little cinnamon helps also, but it's not essential. And so sometime shortly after you brush your teeth and do your morning thing, apple helps take that the toxins out of your body. Just, I don't know how it works, but somehow it works. And here's another one. Cinnamon This is Ayurveda. Cinnamon and apple makes red blood cells. From time to time, I'm a little in the senior citizen category now, so I have to watch my health. And when they take blood tests, my red blood count is way up there because I've been taking apple and cinnamon in the morning. And, you know, red blood cells are important for fighting when some disease comes. These are just little tips of, you know, not a big deal. Take apple in the morning. And it, you know, don't do it at night and refrigerate it. Do it in the morning because then it's fresh and it's, that's the way it's supposed to be. So, back to the presentation here. At night, there's a certain rejuvenation of the body, but also a stagnation of the body. And it helps do your jump start, you know, get you charged for your day's activity. You connect body, mind, and heart to this place of higher consciousness, and your whole day will be more productive. And negatively, when that's not done nicely, I have experience with people that report, when my morning yoga and meditation are not done nicely, the whole day is different, more turbulent. Just some sharing. When we rise early, especially, it, you know, it's somehow in connection with the sun sometime in the morning, it puts us in harmony or synergy with the energizer of our solar system, the sun. It helps. Okay. Now, that's the body. Alignment of body, then comes mind and heart, and we're done. Alignment of the heart has these different elements we're going to discuss briefly. It's a big topic, but the functions of the mind. One of the functions of the mind to help the mind become focused is determination. And being present with sound, particularly with sound vibration, with the mind. The sound is there, and then the mind needs to go to the sound. And then finally detachment. So we'll go through these, try to go quickly. The functions of the mind, that's the first one. So according to the Vedas, the function of the mind is accepting and rejecting. There's Sanskrit terms, sankalpa vikalpa. That's what the mind does. It accepts something and rejects something. And it can even be, you know, as you're contemplating something, like, you know, how are you going to spend your weekend? And the mind is contemplating, I think I'm going to do this and that, and you're making a plan, and even as you're making the plan, it's rejecting some elements, and maybe you should do it differently. And that's a mind function, accepting and rejecting. So when it comes to mindfulness and meditation, we still utilize those functions, but they're directed. Sankalpa, this is the intention behind what you're doing, means the mind desire to join thoughts into concepts, theories, and tableaus of theories. That's what the mind does. It's an accepting function of the mind, and then a rejecting function of the mind. Vikalpa is the mind's function of rejecting thoughts, as well as simplifying and limiting experiences which are gathered through the senses of sight, sound, smell, taste, and touch. So we're processing our experiences through the mind. Information is like a central switchboard. Information is coming in, and we process that information that's coming in within the mind, and rejecting some things and ordering some other things. And, you know, if your mind is out of order, you're a disoriented person. And if the mind is in good order, you're well-oriented and balanced person. Mindfulness helps put things in proper order, this mantra meditation. And they're most effectively ordered or aligned by sound. That's the main message. That's why it's in such big letters. An example of this that's sometimes given is a cash register. Now the current cash registers are all digital and they look a little different. But this is an old one. These are buttons in the front, and you press the buttons. That's the sensory data that's coming into your life. And then on the register, there's this, you know, some number. That's how much you have to pay or how much you've paid, and here's the change you're going to get from. So this is the senses, and this is the mind. It registers things and processes things. Intelligence is needed to give direction to the mind, and your intention is very important. Here's Patanjali Yoga Sutras. Anybody familiar with Patanjali Yoga Sutras? Some of you. He's a sage who wrote texts. He's like the authority on yoga. On specifically, you know, the Eightfold Yoga System. And one of his sutras, little sayings, is this one. The purpose of yoga practice is to stop the mind from its fluctuations based on accepting and rejecting. And it's not easy to do that, to focus the mind. And something that helps is your intention or determination. What's the reason you're doing your yoga or meditation? And, you know, it's good to be clear what that purpose is. And that purpose helps to organize the mind. The mind isn't good at organizing things, but it's good at following things. So we'll do this. You'll see this image twice. Here's the first time. We're going to go through this. Four steps. Intention. The Sanskrit word is sankalpa. Intention, you're students, most of you, if not all of you. Before you got here, there was an intention. You did things, prepared yourselves and qualified and made applications and jumped through hoops and did backflips, and now you're here. Because there was an intention. So intention helped drive your attention. And where your attention went, you placed some energy. And, well, you're not at perfection, but at least you're here. So with yoga system, the same principle works. Behind the yoga, supposing your intention is, I like the feeling of balance of my body when I do yoga. I feel good. My body feels good. I like yoga because I feel good. And my mind becomes more peaceful and relaxed. Just like the little experiment, 5 deep breaths. And you feel something. Feel a little, you know, the stress level subsides a bit. And you keep going, you go deeper, deeper levels, and there's higher consciousness, not just, so, depends on what your intention is. I just like to feel good. Or, I like to feel good, but more important, and that's a subset of this higher consciousness position. I want to know who I am. You know, in a deeper sense than I'm born and get an education and get a job and get married and have kids and get grandkids and die. And that's it. And I still don't know who I am. I'm saying this when I was in college, I'm sharing something with you. I didn't want to be at the end of the conveyor belt of life and still not know. I didn't want to be so busy to being successful that I don't know who I am. So I appeal to you. Don't make that mistake. You don't have to give anything up. Just be focused on asking deeper questions. Like what's really deep, deep inside. But if you don't touch that, what's deep inside you, what's really important to you, not what society says or somebody says, but what's you, If you don't ask that question, you won't get the answer. And if you don't have the answer at the end of your life and you still don't know, that's sad. Don't make that mistake. Don't do that with your life. And you ask, and you're more likely to get an answer than if you don't ask. So this is the intention message. So we'll go through it quickly. Where intention goes, attention flows. Like this example of your intention of getting a good education at Northeastern, and here you are. With meditation, it also works. This be here now, it's a phrase when I was in college. Now it's mindfulness or be in the moment. Then it was be here now. There was a Harvard professor, Richard Alpert, that resigned as a Harvard professor and went into meditation and yoga and wrote a book, Be Here Now. It was popular at the time. Be in the moment. Be present. There's the past and lamenting over the past or why didn't it work out better than it did. That's motive ignorance. And always planning for a better moment in the future without being present. And when you find yourself doing that, Bhagavad Gita recommends, for whatever, from wherever the mind wanders due to its flickering and unsteady nature, one must certainly withdraw it and bring it back under the control of the self. It's an effort. This is the mind. And bring the mind back to this place of focus. And focus is your intention. That's where your attention goes. Just like a camera lens. You move it till it's the image is now in focus. And some people are focused on making money. Some people are focused on being successful in some competitive sports. And those meditation works on the same principle. Intention helps focus your attention. And where attention goes, energy flows. Nice saying. And it's true. In order to get yourselves to this position, a lot of energy was invested because that's where your attention was going because you had an intention. Here's what it says in Bhagavad Gita. It is undoubtedly very difficult to curb the restless mind, but it's possible by suitable practice. Oh, this is the next one. Detachment. Detachment from the temporary, detachment from the distractions. Then emotions can carry you in different directions. So learn negative emotions. Of course, if your sadhaka agni is strong, it becomes easier. You have some inner strength. But let negative emotions go. You do needful things as is needed but if you just dwell with the negative emotion, you don't get clearer and stronger sense of purpose of how to address the situation that's giving the negative emotion. Let the emotion go and let your intelligence function how to address whatever is in front of you. If you don't have control of the mind or this mind alignment, it's difficult. Let's carry on. There's that same mind leading. So again, intention. How are we doing with time? 9:30. Okay. Great. I'm just about ready to wrap up. So the final is alignment of the heart. In his explanation, he gave something a little, I'm going to give something a little different than what he gave. The heart is, it's related to your feelings, and feelings are within the mind, but it's, you know, it goes more deeply. It's the orientation or general attitude or regard for something or someone. You know, deeper-seated disposition or orientation towards life, towards yourself, towards other persons who are close to you, towards what you're doing with your life, you know, your development of your career, development of relationships of friends that are close to you, family, whatever it is that's of importance to you in the moment. And the deeper-seated feeling. So with yoga and mantra meditation, it has a lot to do with intention, but it, you know, the deeper sense of, like, my life mission. I'm going to stretch our time a little bit. Someone requested me to look at, so I looked at, a little presentation by our former President Obama. And he's very personable. He was describing when he was young, he was angry youth because he grew up without a father. And he was angry that his father was absent in his life. And so he is very close to his mother and very close to his grandparents. But he was, you know, ruled by anger to a degree. And he said, also, I had no real direction in my life. I was like a typical teenager. And then something happened. He got over the anger part. And then he started thinking, instead of about himself, he started thinking about, what can I do that's useful in service to others? And that gave him a sense of purpose. That was something that's, he was just sharing his heart, and that's what was in his heart and moved him to where he went. Now, some people may like or not like, but he became an empowered personality from, you know, an angry personality because of something that ruled his heart and directed his mind and his body and his life. So same with yoga, meditation, reaching this, I'm calling it this place of higher consciousness, life's mission. It's very important. So now we're going to end with our little experiment. You ready with the experiment, the exercise? Sanjaya, can you help with the beads?
So while the beads are getting distributed, so as you heard, so mantra meditation is focusing on the mantra. In this particular case, we are focusing on the Hare Krishna mantra. It goes like Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So as you were hearing, it is about developing an alignment between the body, mind, and the heart. And in the region of the heart is the seat of higher consciousness. And mantra meditation, through this specific mantra, this Hare Krishna Mahamantra, is allowing us to develop that relationship at the level of the heart with deep feelings. That's because the mantra, the sound vibration, is non-different from the object of higher consciousness. And therefore, when we are chanting this Hare Krishna Mahamantra with attention, then we are allowing that relationship to be established. So the way to use these beads is we hold with our middle finger and thumb of our right hand. And we start with this special bead, as you can see. And we chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. And then we move one bead forward. And there are total 108 beads.
And if you go around, it takes approximately 10 minutes when you at least begin, because you are generally slower in pace, and therefore it takes approximately 10 minutes. But when you get used to the chanting process, it should take about 7 to 8 minutes. So let's try to do this together. Again, the focus, so that here the intention that we can all think of right now is, we are appealing to the seat of higher consciousness to accept us so that we can develop deeper relationship. Is that okay? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So, so far what we have tried to do is that we try to guide the mind to focus or concentrate on the holy name, and particularly hear these sound vibrations. So let's take down to two further levels. The next level that we would like to do is, we would like to hear carefully at least the first Hare. Okay? And you will see that when you are able to hear the first Hare, you would be able to hear the rest of the mantra. So this is, we are establishing the principle that it is possible to guide the mind, as we just heard. Because mind needs a good leader. Mind likes to follow, not organize. And therefore, we would like to direct the mind to hear the sound Hare, and then hear the rest of the mantra. And we can also apply the other principle we heard, that wherever the mind wanders, we keep bringing it back, because the tendency of the mind is to wander. So we try to apply this, and then we will go to the third level. Okay, so again, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
So far what we have established is the alignment of the body and the mind. The body is properly postured, and then we are able to direct the mind, and we can see by just paying attention to Hare, you are able to hear the rest of the mantra. Now when we bring the heart component, as we heard, the heart has got feelings, and this Maha Mantra, this sound vibration, is non-different from that high consciousness, which is actually has a personality and which can actually give us feedback. So it's not that we are just on our own, we can actually get a feedback. So how can we get a feedback? We can appeal at the region of the heart that please accept me or please engage me in your service. That completes this full definition of yoga, where the soul is relationship, a soul is establishing a loving connection with the super soul. So along with paying attention, we are also bringing this heart component where we are appealing that please accept me. Is that clear? So we will just do that third level and we'll stop for that. So let's bring the heart, the feeling.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
Thank you very much.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare
Hare.
Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
So I'm sure you are feeling from inside now the potency of the names, as we heard that these are not ordinary sound vibrations, but they invoke the appearance of the higher consciousness, and it actually raises our own consciousness to reach there. So at this point we can just open the forum for any questions that you may have, and we'll have the dinner served while you are engaging in the question answer. Thank you for your participation.
Thank you.
So question?
Just a suggestion, not a question.
Okay.
First finger should not touch the mala. Must not touch the mala.
Huh?
First finger must not touch the mala.
Correct.
So for those people who are doing it for the first time, this should not touch the mala. You can do it like this, and this. And when you repeat the mala, when you come to the Meru here, then you are not supposed to cross the Meru. You will like turn your mala and start from the Meru.
Very good. Thank you. Yeah, I mentioned that we should be using the thumb and the middle finger, but you very nicely pointed out that.
Otherwise it will be, bring adverse effect.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Hare Krishna.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Any questions or comments you may have?
You were mentioning about the purpose of life. So how could we find our own purpose of life? So how should we question ourselves?
How should you do which?
Find the real purpose of our life.
How to, your question is how to find the purpose of life.
Yes.
Well,
I don't know if I need this. Let's start with asking the question. First, so you're asking the question. Keep asking the question. I'm serious.
Yes, like my mind is constantly diverting me.
Yeah.
What should I focus on?
And so let's just go back to your question. How do you find the purpose? Keep asking the question, and ask the question, and ask. So, Brahma Jigyasa. Inquisitiveness into that which is absolute. You familiar with that phrase? Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Vedanta Sutra. You've heard Vedanta Sutra? No. Okay. Inquire. Keep just ask the question. Inquisitive. Jigyasa. Inquire. And then you take that inquiry spirit into your life. And one of the important things is sound vibration. So you go to the Vedas, and the Vedas will tell you the purpose of life. But if you're not looking for the purpose of life, it'll just be words on a page or sound that comes in one ear and out the other ear. It doesn't stick. So inquisitiveness is essential. And then connecting with transcendental sound vibration comes next. And then the receiver's on, and here comes the signal. Oh! But, you know, my receiver isn't tuned into the proper vibration yet. Then it requires regular hearing. And then refinement and refinement and refinement of my understanding of that purpose, higher goal of life. So I've been suggesting multiple times this evening, connecting with that place of higher consciousness. That's just very simple language. So for me, you know, when I was at your stage of life, my expression went like this. I know there's a higher reality beyond all these things that are temporary. Strip all the temporary. There's something that's permanent, something that's eternal, something that's really real. I know that there is such a reality. I know that I don't know what it is, but I want to know. That was the starting point. That was my higher purpose. And I don't want to just take somebody's word for it. I want to experience it directly. And that, you know, so then that inquisitiveness connected with sound vibration, I started to understand, and I started to understand more, and then understanding more, and the refinement came through the continued inquisitive spirit and sound vibration. The receiver was on, and the signal was being broadcast. And it started to refine, you know, capturing that signal. And then it becomes inside. That's how. Don't take somebody else's word for it. Find it for yourself. But, you know, first comes I want to know, then sound. You're at a university, and you could study books and become an engineer or become a lawyer or become a whatever. But you're not going to be recognized nor really qualified. That's why you're at the university. You got teachers that know the subject, and you sit in class and you hear the sound because you want to know. How you learn. This kind of knowledge is something you already know. It's just forgotten. It's in a seed in a dormant state, but it's awakened by sound. What do you think? Not sure. Well, consider the points that I just made, and you can ask again afterwards. Anyone else? Yes.
I understood the four components of the meditation. First of all, we identify the intention.
Yes.
What was the second process?
Attention.
Attention, and then we
energy flow,
and then the perfection. So in that process, how do we articulate our thoughts? Do we stop them?
No.
Or do we just concentrate on
the
thoughts that are coming?
You direct them. That's been a function of intelligence. Intelligence is meant to give direction to the mind. And the mind is meant to give direction to the senses. And the senses interact with matter. So it's a hierarchy. There's matter, it's Bhagavad-gita. Indriyani Paranyahur. There's matter, there's the senses, there's the mind, and intelligence. So intelligence, above intelligence, is the soul. So the intention that has to do with who I really am. And so the thoughts of the mind, we just direct them. Go over here, don't go over there. That's the function of intelligence. Supposing somebody doesn't have intelligence, they're in disorder. Supposing somebody has material intelligence, they're focused on whatever that is. Get money. Or like this example. Win your athletic competition, become an Olympic athlete. Very focused. They just very, very disciplined life to achieve that purpose of their life. So that, that's back to his question. What's my purpose of life? Many people don't know. They're just too busy being successful to know what the purpose of life is. And what's the standard of success? You know, it's these things and those things. You get these things and those things. And sure enough, it didn't work. The expectation wasn't there. Depression is an industry, not only in America, in the world. I visit China, and they have, there's some statistic, I forget, it's a big number. So many millions of people are clinically depressed. You know, China's kaboom in their economy and wealth and abundance, and depression is kaboom. So, contentment isn't economic success. Wealth and all the things that money can buy. So, what's really important then? If that's not what's really important to you. Standard of living and comforts and all those things, okay. But what's really important? And those are things, when you know, have the answer to that question, when you're asking that question, it'll help you direct your mind. And so you have to shut the thoughts of the mind down, just direct them. Go here, don't go there. And if the intelligence is strong, the mind will comply. Training the mind is possible. That's yoga. Training the mind. Towards a higher goal, higher purpose. Does that help? You have something more?
Yep. It's kind of a personal question to you.
Yeah.
Have you found the ultimate purpose of your life, and when did you find
it? I'm working on it. I'm clear what it is, I'm working on it. I'm getting there. I'm not there.
So that means that you may also find the purpose of your life.
Yeah.
At the same time.
But getting there and finding the purpose are two things. Yes.
How does one know that ultimately he has found the purpose of his life, or is too?
You're fully satisfied. You don't have any. You know the verse? Bhagavad Gita. Brahmabhuta prasanatma. Na sochati na kam. No hankering lamenting. Tushti, I'm satisfied. I feel full. Do you want this? No. You want that? No. Something that's temporary goes away. I'm satisfied with it. And a life of service to others. Because you've received, you want to give.
There was a question here. You had a question?
Yeah. You spoke a little bit on how asking yourself who you are.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a little bit different than your purpose. And they were asking about your purpose. Have you been able to ask and identify who you are?
There's, in the preliminary stage, I'm giving, it's a personal question, in the preliminary stage, yes. But not in the complete stage.
Right.
I mean, what's the complete stage? I have a notion of what the complete stage is. And that notion is, not only we're a spiritual entity, but we have spiritual form. And that spiritual form has spiritual activity in the spiritual realm. And with a certain personality, a certain, you know, set of feelings in that mature stage. So I'm not there. But I have a sense of who I am, you know, the less than that mature stage. I'm a tiny spark, part of the big whole. And the part function is to serve the whole. And I'm happy. And in serving the whole means serving other parts, because they're also parts of the whole. But here we are. And that's part of who I am. Now, it's not fully matured. What's my, you know, there's a body, and then there's a soul within the body. What's the form of the soul in the mature, developed stage? I'm not there yet. But I know that's, you know, it's just like, you know, how old is your daughter?
Five.
You're five? So I remember when your older sister was also five, but she's a little bigger than you now. But, you know, let her continue to grow and she's going to become a little bigger. She's not a little bigger yet. Then she's going to become, have fun becoming a teenager. Anyway, maturity comes just by, spiritual maturity comes by spiritual development, by striving by right means, as it says here in Bhagavad Gita. Someone else. You have, yes.
I was wondering how you conceptualize this journey. Is it like a physical journey, you get to a place and there you are, or is it more like a process in flux so that you could get there and then tomorrow you're no longer there, or that place you are now is actually no longer the place you're supposed to be?
But there's a third option besides those two. It's not the second one, but it's not the first one. It's an ongoing journey. Like this question over here about, you know, knowing who you are. I have a directional sense, and it's not yet fully. So the keep going is, there's no limit.
So it's not so much a place to get.
It's not static.
Right.
It's dynamic.
So it's just the fact, just being on that journey.
Well, it's not just, your life is a journey. Row, row, row your boat. You know that story? It's not that one. It's the spiritual reality or the spiritual realm is fully dynamic. It's not static. So it's we're learning. We're maturing, we're growing, we're experiencing, and it goes deeper and deeper. It's like an ocean that has no bottom. Oceans have bottoms. This is an ocean that has no bottom. It's a realm that has no limits. But it's not like a chameleon, it just keeps changing. It just gets deeper and deeper. The experience, the realization, the consciousness, the capacity for experience grows. Emotions, knowledge, happiness, without limit. Loving relationships, without limit, with no limit. Not static. It's not, you know, a reality that disappears and becomes something else and becomes something else. Just mature spiritually.
Okay, we're good. Oh, yes.
One last question. Is this third eye awakening part of meditation? I mean, the end of achieving the...
Different people mean different things when they use that term. So I don't know what you mean when you use that term.
I mean,
inner awareness, if that's what it means, yes, awakening of that inner awareness, you know, inward vision. And then, so the inward vision is not just you, but, you know, the super soul guiding all of us. Yes.
The process of realizing who we actually are and fulfilling the purpose of our life, is it that which makes us gives us moksha and freedom from the cycle of life and birth?
Yeah, that's a byproduct though. That's not the goal. It happens, but that's not the goal. Is being connected with the Supreme. That's the goal. And then there's details of what that is like, which is what her question is and his question. Okay, we're done. Thank you.